And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
After so much time away, you knew we couldn't just do an episode and then disappear for another month, because we're back here on Time's Ours. Now, yes, last week was just me and Nate Taylor as we returned back from what ended up being an accidental hiatus, but now we return Seth Kaiser. No oral surgery for you today, sir. You're back with us here, and along with you, me and Nate. Nate's on vacation. Sorry, I forgot. Nate is on vacation. I don't know where he gets off thinking that he can take off a solid 8-day stretch in the middle of the quietest part of the NFL offseason. But Seth, I mean, you got last week and most of the last month away.
I never take days off.
Never.
So
definitely not for the things that were probably in your calendar for months.
I did need to let you know that I actually have my third vasectomy scheduled in 15 minutes. And so I'm not going to be able to. Oh, do people normally remember they have surgery? It was a really minor surgery. I just I had to get, you know what? I'm not going to do this to you again because I already horrified you in text messages. It was a thing to do with gums with teeth there. And I'm fine. I'm doing well.
Yeah, it wasn't an emergency surgery, right? It wasn't.
No.
You're good now. I would have you share the details again, but I personally like to listen to podcasts sometimes when I'm like having breakfast in the morning or maybe dinner at night. Maybe people like to do it during lunch or whatever. So just, you know, Seth's teeth and gums are good for chewing, and that's the only thing you need to know. That's the situation you find yourself
in. I am ready. My gums and teeth are ready to talk Chiefs.
That's good. We should probably do it, at least a little bit of that. You've had a treasure trove of content come out in the Chief in the North newsletter, and we are still a little ways away from training camp. We'll have time to do some mailbags and get the whole crew back together and everything. But we legitimately, I mean, since you've been on the show last, which is only missing one episode that we actually had, but basically, since I got married, you've written a lot of stuff. There's a lot of very fun suggested reading on things like how Patrick Mahomes continues to break charts, the top 12 most fun moments of the season, plus some honorable mentions if you want to go and enjoy all of those. And then some other things that we will talk about within today's show here. But do you need to give the light sail to anybody for the stuff we're skipping over from if people maybe missed in their inbox at mnchiefsfan.substack.com where the older pieces have resided? And if you sign up right now, you get access to the entire archive, by the way. So if you're not subscribed yet, you'll get them all.
And one that's actually unlocked right now is the Outlier Part 2. It was a continuation of a project I've done before.
Like it's from a language you're not that comfortable with.
How do you say Outlier?
Just that way, exactly.
You know, sometimes you lie to me and I'm just not sure what to do with this. This is like, is this like the bagel and bagel thing? Because I can't do this with you too, because I am already in like a 10-year fight with my wife over this that I'm sure if I just dig my feet in a little longer, I'm going to win.
How does she pronounce the circular dough with a hole in the middle that's not a donut?
It would be a bagel.
To her speaking of it? Yeah, because you're a bagel guy,
it's
right?
It's a bagel. Yeah, yep. I'm a bagel guy.
You should
guy.
Keep saying it like and, that well, around people where, for the rest of your life.
And I was giving her the hard... So I, like the other night, my son and his girlfriend were hanging out with us. So I wanted to give her a really good example of how a husband is passive aggressive towards his wife. So that way she's got good expectations for my son moving forward. And so I was just like, oh, well, hey, honey, you know, there's a little mess over here. Do you need a rag? You know, well, I don't want to nag you, but like, I mean, it's just like this whole over and over and over. And like, it's just nothing is pronounced like that, but whatever. It's a regional thing. How do you, was it Outlier?
No, I think you said it exactly right. I don't want to, because here's the thing, is every time you pronounce a word wrong, it brings so much joy to me and presumably to our legions of listeners. And like, I'm developing a new sort of, a new school of thought. What I think I'm going to do, it's win-win, because I'm going to build up your confidence and really just sort of continue to give you that positive reinforcement you need, even when you're wrong.
It's going well.
And then people around you will hear you more and more confidently say, oh, you know, that outlier. Oh, I said it correct on accident. That outlier story, you know, that's just, I thought it'd do well, but look in the comment section. It's a big old bagel in there.
I've always hated it when people pronounce it outlier. I've heard it. I like outlier.
I do too.
I'm going to be loudly and confidently wrong, Josh.
Never stopped you before. people like loud, confident, wrong Seth Kaiser. I think that's
quite true. The ball knowing, loudly, irrationally confident. Well, that actually, I was right. But be that as it may. So the talking about,
you don't need to relitigate any of that, or as you might say, relitigate. Sorry.
Come on, we're not going to get anything done, Frisco. So I wrote about how Patrick Mahomes continues to break charts. That one's actually unluked, and so you can try just find it out at the newsletter. See, that was a gentle one. That was some gentle humor there. You can check that out. It's unlocked, and I think it'll bring you a lot of joy, just because it's really interesting to see how Mahomes, 5 years into his career, has remained a complete, it's spelled O-U-T-L-I-E.
He has been a total animal-y this whole time.
It would have, I like Amanoli. Amanoli. That's hard to say. That is hard to say. And so I wrote about that. And it's really cool to see how he really does stand out. You know, he's in the upper right of every chart, and you're not supposed to be able to do that after five seasons. And when you completely revamp your offensive line, and when you completely revamp your offensive system, which they've done, by the way, when they completely revamp, you know, without having Tyreek Hill, it's all this stuff, and all the NFL is supposed to catch up to you and humble you, and it's gone the other way around. I wrote about the most inarguable fun moments of the season. Of course, it's very arguable. I wrote about sequential play calling. I know that's something you want to talk about. I wrote about Trent McDuffie. And the last 2 weeks, I'm writing about the roster. Whether I, when you look at this year's roster and last year's roster, whether the Chiefs are moving up or going down, I know we're obviously going to talk about some of that here. I do want to talk, because I know one thing that I don't think we're going to have time to go through. I wanted to say really quick, talking about the most fun moments of the season. That turned into a three-parter. It turned into honorable mentions. First, I expanded it from 10. Well, I was originally going to do 8. Then I had 10, then 12. And then I was like, I need to do a whole article on honorable mentions. Because like Air Mahomes wasn't part of it. And I was like, whoa, you know. And it's important when you think about like fun moments of a season. In the moment, so like Air Mahomes against the Bengals, right? Because they lost the game, it's really easy to lose sight of how fun that moment was. And that's kind of what I go back to celebrate, right? Is like moments of the season that maybe you kind of forgot about because, you know, maybe they lost the game ultimately. But like the dizzying craziness of what it felt like to be a Chiefs fan when they were just dismantling the Broncos in Denver before the Broncos' furious like 20-point comeback, which was one of the weirder games of the year. Things like that is what I meant to celebrate. But I just wanted to ask you this, if you agree with me on something here.
Okay, probably not.
The third most fun moment of the season, I won't say what number one and number two were. The third most fun moment, I said, is the rebuilding pettiness post-Super Bowl. And I just wrote that one of the reasons we watch sports is to be right about something. That's why there's so many sports fans that are kind of miserable, because what they really like is to complain about, you know, the coach, the GM, the players. And you know, Chiefs fans, we have virtually nothing to complain about anymore. So we've gotten to stomp that out. But we want to be right. You know what I mean? We want to look at people dead in their eye and say from our chest, I told you. I mean, like, you know, I did after the Super Bowl. You keep circling back to that.
It's crazy how that keeps coming up.
And so did you have as much fun as I did with that? Because I had a ball. And then there was like the backlash to the whole rebuilding thing when the Chiefs gave this, you know, the Super Bowl speeches and like Mahomes talked about rebuilding. And then SB Nation did an entire article calling the Chiefs the Super Bowl champions of gaslighting, which shout out to SB Nation, my old stomping grounds. That was a terrible article. Don't know why anyone approved that, but, you know, I appreciate everything that SB Nation does, except that, because that was weird, but... Did you enjoy that as much as I did? Because I thought it was amazing.
I was just really trying to like get to the bottom of what my answer would be and why it would be what it is. And I think I have a true but way less fun truth behind all of that, which is that I did not enjoy it as much because I do a lot of radio every day. And I just think that's it. Like, I don't think it means... Yep. It shouldn't be enjoyable for you or anybody listening or whatever, but I have found myself a little more often more recently being just not fully having taken the red pill. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. I feel like I can see a little bit of the Matrix sometimes in the sports media landscape. And I know you also feel that way at times, but like within the, well, you know, I've just talked about this so much. This has come through. This has come down the line so often, and this has been on Twitter so aggressively that I'm like the range between having a little bit of that during last season of kind of like, hey guys, the Chiefs are coming here again. Like everyone would be better off if you just admitted this. I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed a little bit of the especially post Bengals AFC Championship game and the Burrowhead and the Jabroni and all of that. That had some great energy to it. And then I enjoyed the championship tour that has sort of come with that has had its petty moments from Kelce at SNL to Mahomes and the rings and that's who and all of that, which is very, very recent pettiness. But
which is, by the way, that's one reason it's so great to have a rival. Yes. And like the thing is, low key, I kind of like the Bengals coaches and players, like, I like most of them. They're good players. They work hard. They're a legitimate rival because they've beaten the Chiefs.
Except for Big
like,
Lou.
Like, people take it so
personally. Go get a head coaching job, man.
Yeah. Someone give Big Lou a head coaching job. I'm tired of him having really good game plans that are different every time. But, like, that you see that happen. You know, rivals bring that out. But I just had to point that out. Like, because you use some of the pettiness there. And then here's the other thing. The Chiefs didn't really get a Super Bowl. They had a Super Bowl parade last time, obviously. And then, like, immediately after that, I mean, you know, we all remember. We don't need to rehash. 2020 was a weird year.
Sure, that's one way you could say it, for sure.
There was a lot going on. A lot was happening. And so the Chiefs didn't really get to do all this stuff, and they are savoring this moment.
And that I've enjoyed. I've enjoyed the, you know, people getting mad about the Lombardi trophies being at the draft, which Kansas City hosted, and all everything over in that realm I have enjoyed.
Yeah. It's a new phase of the Chiefs that, especially if they continue to be as successful as they've been the last 5 years, they've been by far the most successful team in the league the last 5 years. And that's not even really debatable at this point. If they keep it up, like they've started to ascend from really, really good, good team, really, really good team, great team. And the next phase is villain, right?
Yeah.
Like that's it. Dynasty / villain. And I'm totally here for it. Like I love it so much. One other thing with the arguable most moments. And from there on, I'm handing it back off. I'm no longer going to even attempt to drive. Do you remember how fun it was when Arrowhead made Sheffer's voice speak?
Oh, yeah.
Because that was an incredible moment.
No, that one ruled. I love that.
There was no penalty for blocking the back. It was like, and this dude's been doing it for a minute. It's not like he scares easy. And I'm sure he probably just inhaled wrong or had to cough, maybe. But from what I've heard from fans that were at that game, they were like, no, I have never heard Arrowhead that irate or that loud. And so these are just the little things, you know, we can have like a podcast where we just talk about dudes. One of the great things after a Super Bowl winning season, you can just have a podcast where you just talk about moments and they were all awesome.
Yeah. I was thinking about that. I was, what was it? I was going through listening to something on the way home and kind of having that realization of like, It was, oh, I was listening to the, we can just take it over here, actually, if you want. This will smooth up nicely. I was listening, because the Substack app has a great listen feature, to your story about the offensive roster, this moving up, going down, part one, part two. And it was listening to you, to the AI voice on Juju Smith-Schuster, who you wrote about, and I wanted to talk more specifically about the wide receiving core for the Chiefs and where that's moved, because with a little spoiler alert here, you in this piece come off a little more concerned than most people covering the Chiefs right now, I think. I think your reason for it is all really good, and that we should, I just wanted to unpack it some, but it also spawned like the secondary thought of, you know, I'm going like way out into the distance here, but you know, in 20 years, we're probably going to have the sentence, or I'm going to say, or someone's going to say to me, remember Juju Smith-Schuster won a ring with this team? I'm going to go, oh yeah, he did. Now, didn't he have like almost 1,000 yards for that team? Wasn't he a pretty big part of it? And just the details that get lost when you zoom out. Because it's already happening to me from one Super Bowl to the next, just in terms of like, there was a Tyrann Mathieu one and a Justin Reed one. That's kind of weird. But yeah, Juju is a funny one just because I think for impact in a 1 year sample size is going to be one of the more interesting examples. So let's talk about that some in the series up on the newsletter right now, taking a look at both sides of the ball. If the group's in a better place right now than it was last year. And on the offensive side, there are some easy ones where the quarterback position changed only behind Mahomes. The tight end position,
I skipped running backs on
it. You did skip running backs. I didn't catch it when I was listening to
it. I literally didn't write about them. Someone replied to my tweet when I tweeted about the article, like, man, Seth taking this running backs don't matter thing to a whole new level. Like, boy, am I overcompensating for defending the CEH draft pick.
So we can talk about that. You know, there's a sort of a Times Ours exclusive.
Yeah. I genuinely, it's because it's the same three dudes. And I just spaced
it's,
it out.
It's generic Prince in Ronald Jones's spot.
Yeah.
And we know about Pacheco. And know, maybe, you know, McKinnon's year older.
Yeah. We know who Pacheco is. He's got some room to develop. Running backs generally don't develop a ton in the league, but the areas he could develop, receiving and pass protection, are areas they usually do. So that's great. We know who McKinnon is. We also know the Chiefs aren't going to play him much early in the season because they want him healthy in the last 2 months, which is the correct way to use Jerick McKinnon. We know who Clyde is, and I actually listened to you and Nate last week talking about how he does have a valuable role on the team and how he's also in maybe the most unique position on the entire team, and one that I don't think is probably particularly fun.
No, I bet it's not.
And I mean, especially as a guy that came in as a star and like the team kind of gave him the star type treatment, even coming into last year. And he was playing well early in the season before he got hurt. And then, you know, just you could see the man, you know, people talk about football being a game of inches. But what do you think is the difference between how far Isaiah Pacheco goes in the first 5 yards versus Clyde Edwards-Helaire? It's probably like a 1 yard difference in those 5 yards, right? Like, you know, there's like a 0.01 difference between the two of them in those steps. And that makes that big of a difference. That's kind of sad. Yes. Like it's just hard. But no, I skipped over them. And I felt like you were going to gloss over quarterbacks. So I cut you off because I'm rude in part, but I just wanted to say shout out to Chad Henne. Enjoy retirement.
Yeah.
Because I said the quarterbacks are very slightly down, and that was a nod to Chad Henne being gone. Sorry, Blaine Gabbert, but until I see you step in at, like, is there a worse situation than Chad Henne got thrown into?
No, I don't think so, and it's why I do think you made a good point. We can't go through every position, and people should go read it, but the idea of, like, you know, Blaine Gabbert checks all the boxes, but I've never seen him thrown into a terrible spot in a playoff game and was told to save the season, and I've seen Chad Henne do it twice, so...
It's like, hey Chad, you know how you haven't played it all this year? Go save the season. I like that. Like, hey, by the way, now with a special appearance by Travis Kelce in the divisional round, like, hey, what you're gonna do is just find Travis, okay? Just find Travis. He will be open.
Hey, you've got like 4 yards, throw it to 10. Like, hey, but you know, big players, big moments.
Yep. But anyway, so you were moving to tight ends, same group of guys.
I was moving past tight ends, if I'm being honest. the little bits about like how are they going to adjust Kelce's workload is something we should talk about over time. But I really do want you to talk about receivers in particular, because again, there's an air of concern that comes through in your analysis. And frankly, I think maybe, as you, I think, also kind of surmise, we might be a little too comfortable with a group that has even more questions than it did this time last year, and including one guy who we never talk about anymore. That guy is Mecole Hardman.
Yeah, and that's, I love that you brought that up. So I'll caveat it with this. If people think that I'm turning into a pessimist, I'm more optimistic defensive line than some people are. I don't think, well, you know what? We can go into that some other time if we want. With wide receivers, though, if last year was kind of like a proof of concept that when you have Mahomes, Kelce, and Reed, you don't need a strong wide receiver core, I guess I get that. But Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster and Mecole Hardman isn't a terrible trio. You don't have a legit one in there, but Juju Smith-Schuster's a legit two. And Marquez Valdez-Scantling is a legit three. And Mecole is kind of like, he's a legit, you know, guy who can fill a niche and he can kind of, he can do some things for you, right? And then Travis Kelce's your one. So it kind of makes sense numbers wise, right? There's a huge difference between doing that and then not having a number two receiver who's proven, or a number four receiver who's proven, or really anyone who's really proven a combination of productive and healthy. And outside of Marquez Valdez-Scantling, the Chiefs don't have that other than maybe what? Richie James?
I mean, and productive that's I like Richie James. Productive is a huge word for what he's done.
Exactly. Richie James is more of a guy who his profile is worse than MVS's was when he came to the Chiefs.
Oh, yeah, by quite a bit.
Yeah, by a fair margin.
Last year he had 569 yards receiving last year in a career best.
And hey, in that Giants offense, that's not bad. He is a guy that should be on an NFL roster, maybe grabbing some snaps here and there. And maybe he surprises us. There's some people that are convinced. I was talking to Sterling Holmes, and he's convinced that Richie James is gonna, you know, get her done.
I mean, credit Sterling for something else later. He also does love Richie James. I can't mention him twice in this show, but you're
well,
right.
I mean, he also eats cinnamon rolls at weddings before you're supposed to. So
he is really, I tell you what, that's one that we could litigate now that Nate's gone.
What do you mean?
No, I just have some very specific questions for you and the sort of lawyerly advice you gave to Sterling.
I didn't think he'd actually eat them. I was like, yeah, sure, go nuts. I'm not going to do it, but you go nuts. And that was not the correct thing to say.
No, you thinking that Sterling essentially wouldn't follow through on a dare is actually your fault. This is it's been your fault.
I'm 38. This is my responsibility. I get it. And Jazz basically said that. She's like, I cannot believe you said that to him. So now you know, in case you were somehow curious after years of knowing us, that Jazz does have a much better head on her shoulders than I do. Yeah. That was my bad. That was my bad. Should have thought that through.
She has a much better head on her shoulders than you do. And Sterling had a much earlier cinnamon roll in his belly than the rest of us did. I mean, it happens.
Hey, at least you got to eat at your wedding. Jazz and I, by the time we got done saying hi to everyone, the food was gone.
At your wedding, not at mine.
At our wedding. Yeah. Yeah.
You left before the food at my wedding, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we, you know, I know how it goes. The party can't really start until the Baptists leave. And so we got out of there. I could tell everyone was trying so hard to behave themselves. Like, okay, let's let these good people have fun on their way to hell. And we'll just kind of get out of here.
Well, if I would have known that was the deal, I would have made a few different suggestions for the wedding itself.
Yeah, there's all sorts of things we could have done differently. Just in case people are wondering, we just needed to get on the road. We were driving 10 hours home.
I didn't realize we could have had a Baptist and a secular wedding.
Yeah, here we're going to listen to hymns and not sway, but think about swaying.
Yeah.
So anyway.
No crying aloud at a Baptist wedding.
Oh, for the love of all things good and pure. Oh, by the way, Renee and her dad had me bawling like a baby. I've reached that age to where your guys is like the wedding part was great. But the you know, Isabel's getting a little older. She's 10 now and
the dance
whatever.
Is what got you?
Not just no the, the when he gave her away. And you don't have to, because she didn't see it. Because brides never see it. This happens at every wedding, basically. Okay, basically every wedding. You know, the dad'll, you know, meet the bride somewhere and he'll walk her up and they'll have a moment to where they talk for just a second and then, you know, they face forward and they move forward, right? Mm-hmm. This happens at virtually every wedding. It happened at yours, and I'm not sure if she noticed it. She saw him, they smiled, gave her a little hug. She said something funny in his ear. I think they kind of chuckled. And then she turned away and looked at you. And his face went from like the face he had on for her to how he was really feeling, and it has nothing to do with you. Let me assure you.
Which was, oh my God, my daughter's marrying a radio host.
Yeah. Okay, that was, okay. When I say nothing to do with you, I'm going pretty fast and loose with nothing.
She could have married a doctor.
But,
no,
but yeah. I think that guy sitting over there with the short hair is a lawyer. He seems to really like that blonde lady, though. Yeah, I thought it was inappropriate for him to be trying to find husbands at the wedding, too. But no, it was a cool moment. And brides almost always miss it because they're focused on their groom, and they should be. You guys are focused on each other. It was a beautiful wedding. It was awesome. You guys did a great job with it. But no, there's no but there. It's always interesting. That moment tore me to pieces because it's such a dad thing to not show that person that you're devastated because it's their day.
She's and you're marrying just, an idiot.
No, it's you don't. Let me just tell you, can I, real talk.
Oh, no.
Let me just tell you in a tiny little picture.
Hey, we don't have Nate, so we do have a shorter Zoom meeting than usual.
Oh, yeah, good. no, we can get through this. Dads will appreciate it. So my daughter, Isabel, is 10. Last year, she drew a picture of herself holding hands with another boy for the first time, right? And the only reason we found out that's what she was doing, well, it's a long story, okay? So I saw the picture, and it was her and this boy holding a picture or holding hands. And what I realized as I looked at the picture is that she had never in her entire life drawn a picture of her holding hands with a boy who was not me. Mm. And I went into our, and I said, wow, that's a great picture, honey. And I smiled at her, and I said goodnight and whatever. And I went into our room, and I told Jazz that hurt way more than I thought it would. And that's the whole thing there. And it's impossible to understand. And I'm playing the you know, oh, you'll never get it card. It's impossible to understand until you're a dad with a daughter. And you're like, oh, that's why they're all raving lunatics at their daughter's weddings. Because for them, it's kind of a funeral. Terrible stuff, but totally true.
Now imagine how devastated you'd be if she was holding hands with a stick figure holding a microphone.
No. I would have burned it and locked it.
That point it would have been.
Imagine if there was just, instead of a dollar sign above the guy's head, it actually had a negative sign in front of that dollar sign. That's what I'll be offering. Anyway.
Honey. Not in my house.
Not in my house. So the wide receiver group, the problem that
a beat reporter, maybe a journalist. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
A pundit.
Yeah. A pundit, a talking head, and not even a talking head, a disembodied voice. My daughter's marrying a narrator.
I'm going to tell you after the show what I tore a page of for that bit, by the way. It's just funny.
Oh, that's a good bit.
So, anyway,
wide receivers.
People can't. I mean, it's been a long time since we've done this show. So
the floor is scary, and it's different than how it was last year because, and again, Juju Smith-Schuster does not make or break an offense. He doesn't. The ceiling is always going to be Mahomes, Kelce, Reed. However, there were games last year, you know, the Bengals, the Bills, a few others where, I mean, the Colts even, where some issues with separation against man coverage hurt
them.
That's
the thing. I feel like people have forgotten that part. We talked about that a lot.
Yep. And they adapted. And Andy Reid, they have a ton of different route combinations that can beat man coverage. And so they can do some of those things. And there's a lot of talent. Like Sky Moore has a lot of talent, I think. I think Rashee Rice has a lot of talent. They've got guys. And even having, like, say, like a Richie James type who is like Justin Watson, except a little faster. Like, not long speed. Justin Watson's pretty fast, but I mean a little quicker. Mm-hmm. That matters. But it's just, it's a risk. And some of those games did happen. And so that's where you have to, like, That matters for consistency, not for the ceiling. The ceiling of the offense is still going to be incredibly elite, easily the best in the NFL. But how consistent you can be, there's a lot of ifs there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm going to pick just one spot on the defensive side because I do want to talk to you about the other reviews and stuff. So you want to read more of the other position groups. On the offense, up in the newsletter. On the defense, up on the newsletter. But I feel like there is clearly two position groups getting talked about the most for the Chiefs this offseason, wide receiver and defensive line. Maybe most specifically edge, and I think right now we're all like a pretty chill place on Chris Jones, just kind of waiting on Quinnen Williams, and so we don't need to have like a full panic fest about that, but if he, you know, gets traded, we'll do an emergency pod or something. But when you go through the defensive line and you look at, as you layered it out, a lot of big snaps are gone. There are some obvious guys lined up to fill those gaps, but there are a lot of snaps missing. And I thought that you laying it out the way that you did made that land. So where's your optimism and where's your concern across the D-line?
You know, this maybe helps balance out my pessimism about the wide receiver room, which again, ceiling higher than last year's. So maybe I'll close on that so people don't yell at me. The defensive line, the more I looked at the defense, the more cautiously optimistic I got. With defensive line, the one thing that bothers me right now is that as things stand, they seem like they're counting on FAU to eat up 700 or 800 snaps. Maybe not quite that many, like say 500 snaps, like Dunlap's number of snaps last year. And that's a lot to ask of a rookie. Like Karloftis led them at edge in snaps last year, but most edge rushers can't come in and be non-weaknesses their first year. Hats off to Karloftis that he wasn't. It's hard to do a couple years in a row. But overall, on the defensive line, I like their top talent more than I did last year. I think, and I think I've said this to you before, that I thought Mike Dana was probably their second best pass rusher last year.
Yep.
And so I think their top four guys of Dana, Amenihu, Jones, and Karlaftis is better than their top four last year, because I really like Amenihu. I think he's a guy, especially from the interior, he rushes really well, but I think he rushes from the edge a little bit better and a little bit more consistency than we got from Clark at this point in Clark's career. So I think they're fine there. And I think they've got replacements. Like Tershawn Wharton can replace some of Colin Saunders' pass rush snaps from the interior, right? And a man whose ability to rotate inside. And Jones can rotate outside. So they've got the bodies generally to get there, but I feel like they're missing a veteran defensive end. Like, they basically, what I'm waiting to see happen, and you guys addressed this, I think, last week, if they, you know, let's say they extend Chris Jones, then they give Carlos Dunlap a call and say, hey, do you want to sign, but just like on, like, I don't know, August 15th or something? Mm-hmm. Like, because those St. Joe summers get hot.
And also, you know who could use those reps? Felix and Karlaftis. Like that guy,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, you know who doesn't need them even a little? A guy that's been in the league for 13 years.
Carlos, like, can you pass the required physical testing when you get here?
Yeah. Is this, we're going to put you on the Jerick McKinnon plan.
Yeah.
That, like, here's part of your contract. Nah, you don't need to do OTAs, buddy. Like, which is amazing, by the way. Shout out to Jerick McKinnon. But that to me would make me feel a lot better, because I think the ceiling is higher for this group than it was last year. I like Karlaftis. I think he can take a step forward. Dana's gotten better every year, even if he just gets a little bit better. I really like the idea of Amenihu and Jones rushing next to each other because of the way they both win. I think they're going to give some teams problems, but they just feel like they're a body short to me. Unless FAU steps in as a ready-made average NFL defensive lineman like Karlaftis did last year. And again, it's just not easy to do.
Here's where my math problem ends up coming together. Not just that I'm bad at it, but I understand. I feel, again, like, you know, the adding Carlos Dunlap back in, having a veteran would make the group better. But from a roster construction standpoint, this might be a bad reason, just count out with me George Karlaftis, Charles Amenihu, Mike Dana, Felix Onyedike Uzomah, BJ Thompson, who they just drafted, Malik Herring, who they seem to really like, Josh Kando, former draft pick, Truman Jones, Harvard, undrafted free agent. But if you cut that off, including BJ Thompson and Malik Herring, you're at six defensive ends. Is there enough of a jump to make from Carlos Dunlap, or from Malik Herring to a Carlos Dunlap? Do they do the rare thing and cut a day three draft pick in BJ Thompson and try to sneak him to the practice squad? Or can they try to sneak Malik Herring? I see the space at the top of the roster, and this is also makes me feel similarly to the wide receiver group. It feels like they have a full depth chart, but to your point, if you could make one of them a guaranteed average starter, we could be done talking about it. I just don't know who's going to be there.
Right. And that's, you know what, that's a really good point, because who do you chop off? Because you are giving up a developmental guy.
Yeah.
They, like you said, they seem to like Malik Herring. And BJ Thompson is a guy who probably, because of the tools, wouldn't survive the practice squad.
Yeah.
And so
probably of the frame wouldn't survive as a rotational edge in year one.
Yeah, exactly.
Reasonable argument, right? I mean,
and so, no, for sure. That is one thing I was looking here, because if I just listed guys that I don't think they'd want to cut, I've got, I mean, Jones, Amenihu, Karlaftis, Dana, FAU, Herring, Noddy, Coburn. And that's if, like, we're going through, because they're going to keep
include
Noddy
the tackles,
and
you're definitely 10 deep. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I even forgot to, oh man, I didn't put Tershawn Wharton on this list. Although I did talk about him later, so that's
you
fine.
You talked about him, yeah.
Yeah. So I just, it's hard to find the spot for him. I assume they'll probably, my guess would be Herring would be the guy to go, which is a bummer because I think they like him. But that is a really cogent point. There are not a lot of available roster spots on this roster.
Right. Yeah.
You guys hit on that last week, and I could not agree more. Like, when I was going through this, that was one of the things that stood out to me. It's like, oh, you know, who might be that special teams tight end? I'm like, nobody. They got four dudes that they like, and they're going to, that's going to absorb the fullback spot is a fourth tight end. And there are not, there's a couple of roster spots up for grabs, and that's it.
We're going to run short up on time here. Like,
oh my
literally.
Gosh, there's a timer there. Now, this is terrifying.
But so this is going to have to put a clock in your head. I'll tell you, I'll take care of the outro today. You don't even have to worry about it. But
gotcha, ready.
Give me just the ethos of sequential play calling, and we might just have to talk about Trent McDuffie when Nate's here next time.
Sequential play calling, oh man, we should really unlock this more. It's basically the idea that not every play call is designed just to try to gain yards, and sometimes early in games, not even primarily to gain yards. Sometimes it's to set something up down the road that week or in future weeks, and there are really cool examples of it. One of them includes Corn Dog, and that was one of my favorite articles to write all year. Oh, it doesn't give us seconds, Josh. It just says less than one minute
on the Zoom. So we will talk about that and McDuffie more, because I don't think any other earth-shattering Chiefs news is going to happen in the next week. Seth, it's been great to actually do the show with you again, and I'm just going to let you go, and then I'm going to tell people where to get all of your work and Nate's work and our work collectively.
That sounds great.
All right, Batman exit for Seth, and it's over. Seth has been set free. And I will continue to tell you where we go from here. So this is, of course, Ben Time Czars. I hate doing the outro for the show. I usually make Seth do it when Nate's not here, but I'll tell you now. You can follow Nate's work all on Twitter at @ByNateTaylor. You can read his work at TheAthletic.com. As always, you want to check out the latest deal to subscribe to The Athletic. You can do that at TheAthletic.com/TimeZars. Seth is on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan. You can read all of the stories we talked about in today's show at MNChiefsFan.substack.com. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Probably mention that more often. You can follow me across social media at JB Briscoe, JBBRISCO, and all across the airwaves at Sports Radio 810 WHB here in Kansas City. So you can follow us across socials if you haven't already. Sorry that it's just a smidge on the shorter shot side here, although I think between me and Seth today and me and Nate last week, I think we're still averaging a clean hour. So we literally just like had a different recording set up because Nate wasn't here, and I didn't think about it till the show started going on. So thanks for tolerating our I don't know, uniquely lengthy podcasts as they continue to be over the years. And I know we have enough to talk about again next Monday. So I'm going to do my very best. I'm going to see if I can get all three of us together. And we'll talk to you again next week on Times.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.